First of all, I'd like to thank our hosts, David Bates and the Institute for Historical Research, for inviting us to the conference and for drawing attention to the vital but often overlooked question of why history should matter to individuals who live in an open, civilized society. As David said, we're going to choreograph this. The four of us are going to present. We're all going to present individually, and I have the privilege of starting and finishing our presentation. We spent some time deliberating on how we do this talk, and the talk seems to stitch together okay. The problem is passing the baton and sprinting across. So we're looking for our personal bests on this one, so you can keep an eye on the timing. That would be appreciated. I want to begin by focusing on Professor Sam Weinberg's work. He's from the Stanford University in California. And he posed in the introduction to his book this question. Imagine the following test question. Try to identify the source of this statement, and the statement is surely a grade of 33 out of 100 on the simplest and most obvious facts of American history is not a record with which any high school could take pride. And Weinberg asks, does this characterization of knowledge come from which of the following studies does it come from? All of the studies were hugely critical of the knowledge of American high school history students. Is it A, the 1987 NAEP Progress in History Report, B, the 1976 New York Times Test of American Youth, or possibly C, the 1942 New York Times History Exam, or D, none of the above? Now, I won't ask you for a show of hands, but the answer is D, none of the above. In actual fact, the allegedly poor state of historical knowledge among American students comes from a report in 1917 from a research study conducted by two professors of history at Texas University. And they quizzed 688 students, and they were appalled to find that a third of students couldn't even say that the date of the Declaration of Independence was 1776. Now, what this reference shows us is that although society and history teaching and education have dramatically changed since 1917, commentators still seem to be concerned with how well students know arbitrary, often disconnected, pieces of information. Certainly critics in 1917 couldn't blame the TV or family breakup or trendy teaching methods for this apparent lack of historical knowledge. But as Roy Foster showed us in the last talk, the same obsession still seems to sit with us today. The same obsession exists in North America, it seems to exist in other countries in the world, and it certainly seems to exist in the UK. Regularly, we hear critics complain that kids don't know any history, and frequently the public are exposed, often via the tabloid press, to what some individuals and some organisations feel children should know. And here's just one example. It's an example taken from Boxing Day and from the Daily Mail on Boxing Day, and it's just one example among many. With the basic idea that kids don't know much and this is what they should know. But given that Weinberg's research and the research of other scholars suggests that children across generations typically aren't able to recall isolated facts about selected historical events or personalities, perhaps it's worth considering that we are focusing our attention in the wrong place. As Weinberg states, it may be that we have spent so much time discovering, only to rediscover over and over and over, what students don't know, that we have neglected more useful questions about young people's historical knowledge. And we would suggest that there are more important questions to ask. For example, what is it that students actually do know about the past? What understandings of history as a discipline do they have? What big picture of the past do they have? And how do they situate their own personal histories in the context of national and world history? Now, as a result of scholarship spanning almost 40 years, in many respects we know a reasonable amount about some of these issues. For example, we have a pretty good handle on children's disciplinary understandings, and we have a research tradition, say, spanning 40 years, which will tell us much about this in the UK and beyond. As this slide indicates, there are many figures that I'm sure a number of you will recognize who have dedicated almost their lives to researching what children know about history a rich research tradition in the UK, in North America, in Europe, and an increasingly emergent one in South America and in Taiwan. What we're going to focus partially on today is a response to the second question. We do know quite a lot about children's disciplinary understandings, but we know less about their frameworks of the past, their big picture of the past. And recently we've been commissioned by the ESRC to conduct a research project into this particular issue. It's called UHP, as you can see, Usable Historical Pasts. And a little later in our presentation, Peter and Jono will talk about some of the findings or some of the preliminary observations that we can make about that project. But broadly, we're aiming to understand more fully what conception or framework of the past do pupils and students have. Do they, for example, have a big picture of the past? Is their understanding organized coherently or as a series of discrete and disconnected events? Now, I think it's important to realize, although a lot of these questions remain unanswered, the UHP project does not, of course, sit in isolation. Over the past 10 years, international scholars in history and history education have expressed increasing concern and interest in similar issues. Internationally, attention to this issue has manifested itself in, for example, the theoretical frameworks related to historical consciousness established by the German academic Jörn Rusin. Other scholars in different parts of the world have been equally engaged in important research. Peter Satius, for example, at the University of British Columbia in Canada, the Youth and History Project under the wings of Bodo von Boris at the University of Hamburg, and some very interesting discussions that have happened in the last couple of years in the Netherlands, led by Arie Bulschert and others, about this idea of students' frameworks of the past. And then other individuals, such as Ross Dunn at San Diego State University, and in the UK, Dennis Shemilt and his colleagues at the University of Leeds. Now, all of these various initiatives and projects are helping us to develop a firmer grasp of what pupils and students know and how we might best help students develop historical, meaningful historical understandings of key issues, such as what kind of framework or historical frame of reference should students have? How flexible should it be? How should this framework relate to national and canonical knowledge? What kinds of coherent and usable historical frameworks do students need to help them orient in time? What kind of relationship should exist between students' understandings of key disciplinary concepts, for example, change, and the acquisition of substantive or factual knowledge? Clearly, therefore, our work is situated in a broader, more complex international context. And today we hope to offer you some insights into what our inquiries are beginning to expose. Of course, essential to any debate about history education is a keen understanding of what we're trying to achieve, what our aims are, why history matters. Thus, I turn to my colleague, Ros Ashby, to share some of thoughts with you on these vital issues.